Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I want to start, though, with Simone Biles news. Okay, she's not going to perform as part of the individuals, which are upcoming. Is today Tuesday? Yeah, Thursday. So there was some question. Today's Wednesday? Yeah, yesterday, because I did the herd Monday. I'm sorry, my days are all confused. So today's Wednesday. Tomorrow, Tokyo time, they were supposed to have the individual, individuals, okay, for gymnastics. She's going to take some time to herself. And as is completely predictable, you take a sports story, which is really, really interesting, and then we divide it along political lines, and it becomes things, the mental gymnastics that people go to are absolutely positively ridiculous on both of these polar opposite spectrums, which lacks the reality of the actual situation. Reality of it. You know, the defenders of Simone Biles will use it as a kind of woke conspiracy. You're going after a successful black woman, which is complete crap. The other side, the super right-wing conservative, see nobody wants to work, which is complete crap. The whole thing is a joke, making it political. It's a really, really interesting discussion. Really interesting. Because Aaron Rodgers mentioned it today, that, and he said, and it's really smart, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, like, look, we only think of mental health in terms of depression. I think when people say mental health, everybody's triggered into thinking suicide rates, which are higher now than they have ever been, I believe, in the modern history of the United States, despite the fact that we have more people and checks and balances in terms of mental health care than we've ever had previously. We may still not have enough, and there is still simply a taboo to it, okay, especially in men's sports. But the fact is that there are way more opportunities and places and checks and balances and people who are willing to help and start a conversation, and yet our suicide rates are higher. That's a conversation. But Aaron Rodgers was smart. He's like, look, not all mental health stuff has to do with depression or has to do. He mentioned suicide, but I do think that's what he meant without mentioning it. And he's championing what Simone Biles is doing. And I simply asked a question yesterday because I do know the answer. If LeBron did the same thing in the gold medal game, in an NBA Finals game, how would it be received, right? And I do get that athletes now are more keenly aware of their mental status, but I'll continue to maintain that, like, look, part of what we champion about Michael Jordan and The Last Dance is his ability to compartmentalize anything else going on in the world and only focus on winning during the 48 minutes that he played basketball games. It was amazing. And my point has always remained not just how we would treat LeBron, okay, how we treated Paul George when he said he wasn't in a good mental place in the bubble. Okay. And look, in many ways, I will agree, not necessarily with the treatment, but the idea that, like, look, what makes the best athletes isn't just that they're more blessed with incredible athleticism. It's the poise and discipline to be able to perform when sometimes their brain's telling them not to. Right? Like, the greatest hero in modern gymnastics was Kelly Strug, right? Who had the She had the ankle injury. Now, that was a physical injury, but it's also your mind. Like, when you go to college, when you play in college sports, like college basketball, you get up, everybody gets up and runs at some point in time in the morning or in the afternoon. And the idea of running isn't to get you in shape for basketball. Running on a track doesn't get you in shape for basketball. Does it work on some of the quick twitch if you're doing it right? Yes. Does it get you in better physical condition? I guess. The best way to get in condition for basketball is to, wait for it, play basketball. But the reason that coaches do wind sprints, the reason that coaches do up-downs, the reason that coaches do stadium steps, the reason that they run you on a track, regardless of the sport, is to teach you that when your body is telling you, I can't do it anymore, your brain pushes you and your heart and soul and guts push you past your normal limits. That's what makes the best of the best of the best. Everybody's got stuff going on. Matter of fact, I've told people long ago that, and I'll continue, the greatest part about playing a sport at a high level is not just your own ability to compartmentalize everything else going on in the world, but the fact that your sport helps other people forget about their lives. That's the power of it. That when you're really into a game or a match or some sort of showdown or a boxing, a fight or whatever, you're not thinking of your wife or your kids or your job or taxes or COVID or whatever. That's what sports brings. It is a departure from reality for us. So you are able to give us a gift of escaping reality. Meanwhile, you are able to process your own reality and put it aside for that same period of time and succeed. And now we're being told, wait, no, you don't have to do that. You can have sports on your own terms, which is not the reality. But this comes down to the core of what we've said about how you're trying to raise kids and raise athletes. You want them to be aware of their mental health. You want them to be able to overcome those demons or voices in their heads that tell them they can't do what they can do. And they can clearly do it. And I will tell you that whether it's depression or, as Aaron Rodgers said, mental fogginess, it holds you back. No one can speak to it as much as I can. I can stand out in my driveway and make 90 out of 100 free throws, but I couldn't stand on a basketball court in a college basketball game and make 50 out of 100. That's your brain. So I know the power of the 8 pounds above your neck. Some of you 10 or 12, some of you slightly less. You got the Beetlejuice thing going. But that said, okay, we're still at the same place we were previously. I get and respect that Simone Biles has all this pressure on her, that everybody's depending upon her, that it's a lot. It's a lot. But that's the job. That's the job. And remember, her job and the people who comment on her job are far nicer and sweeter and wonderful and thoughtful compared to men's sports. Yet I'm told by any voice that wants to listen, hey, we're in a new era. We need to treat women's sports just as we treat men's sports in terms of compensation and the amount of content. Okay. You do understand the pressure that goes with it. You do understand the commentary that goes with it. So this idea that we're all wrong in how we've been taught about sports for 100 years, and all the people we have championed and all the stories we have shared of people overcoming things in their lives in order to become the greats of all time. Think about the things you celebrate, the moments in sports that you love. So many of them are based upon the backstory of, man, I cannot believe what that guy went through. DJ Hushmanzada is going to join us in 10 minutes. You go listen to my All Ball pod with him. He details the fact that his mom was on drugs. He didn't have a dad that was around. He turned to selling drugs when he was in Oklahoma City. He moved to Barstow, California. He never graduated from college. And yet he went through all of this stuff in terms of selling drugs and not going to school and being kind of a screw up and having this tough lifestyle to making it in the NFL as a seventh round draft pick, junior college to Oregon State to the NFL. And now he's an absolute savant at the position. He's one of the most respected players, okay, that I can think of that played in the NFL. When TJ speaks about his position, Pro Bowl wide receivers listen. He is the best teacher of the craft out there. And yet a good portion of it is his story. You don't think there was pressure on him to perform? You don't think there were dark times there? And I guess the question is, are we now okay with guys just ducking out and ladies ducking out of the biggest competitions of their lives, especially when they represent all of us? If that's the case, okay. You know, okay. If it's not the case, then why are we applauding it? Is there no way she could overcome these demons to perform? She had those demons in the previous Olympics and was magnificent. Why is the pressure so great now? Is it the extra year? Is it how her name, image, and likeness has grown exponentially to where now people are calling her the greatest of all time? Like, what is it? Here we are, day two of the Simone Biles thing, and I think it's growing more fascinating as people try and take it and make some political nonsense out of it. It's just a discussion about sports and mental health, and do you push through or do you step aside? We have always been taught that in sports, the best of the best of the best push through. That's what it's about. That's what true toughness is. But now we're being taught the opposite. It's very confusing. Very confusing. Apparently CNN used my Twitter video about Simone Biles, but they labeled it white. What was it? White male.
Oh, jeez.
White male. White male talking heads take shots at Simone Biles.
Wow.
White male talking heads. All right, CNN, listen, I understand it used to be the home for news. Like during the first Persian Gulf War, do you guys remember when CNN had the live footage of what looked like lasers in the dark? I was in eighth grade the second time. And so this is 2001, right? Wasn't it 2001? Right, I think January 2001 or February 2001, the first Persian Gulf War, right? I remember it used to be, but now this is what we do. A news organization, which is a legit news organization, like chooses to make everything about race. Like, what are we doing? Simone Biles not performing has nothing to do with her being black. Zero. It has to do with a superstar athlete. Some people consider the greatest in the history of her sport, in the culmination of her career, having a bad vault, being in a bad mental health space and going, I'm out. And us starting a discussion about it. And my points, which are completely and totally valid, which is like, hey, if you want to be I get this and you'll get it from CNN. You got it from CNN, a completely uneven treatment of the women's national team wanting to be compensated at a level with the men's team. And like not even doing any research and going like, hey, actually, they make a bigger percentage of the cut. Only the cut is far smaller because not as many people care about women's soccer. Like, again, you're if you want. And by the way, OK, the U.S. women's national soccer team is widely considered the greatest on earth. Haven't always won, but the greatest on earth. We are the men's basketball team. It's Have you heard any discussion or criticism of the women losing so far in Tokyo? Has anybody, I mean, like, look, I know we don't, I mean, I'll get to why we don't, but have you heard anybody? What about the men's team? Well, they lost to France. I've heard and read on this network and others, we got a Popovich problem. I've talked about the culture problem. We've talked with Rick Bucher's said we have a big man problem. Right. No commentary. And what is the difference? The difference is, and this is the reality to it, anytime you will have women's sports tell us, hey, we want equal treatment. Okay, cool. You lose, we can be critical. Whoa, you're being so unfair to us. Which is it? Which is it? If you want to be treated equally, fine. Step into the fire. Well, the pressure is too much. The negativity. By the way, there is no negativity towards women's sports. It doesn't occur. No one has questioned Simone Biles' talent ever. No one's called her a choker ever. No one's actually even said those things. And please don't give me like some one-off tweeter. Like, who cares? The reality is men and women are different. We're different. We're different for the most part in terms of how we handle things emotionally. Sometimes our levels of thoughtfulness, how we handle criticism, how we handle competition. We're the same creatures, but we're different. The X and the Y are very different. But please don't tell me, like, we want to be treated exactly the same. Okay, here you go. Because that's not accurate. That continues to be my point. And it continues to be I believe that we were unfair to Paul George last year when he's like, man, I wasn't in a good mental space. Because I know other people in the NBA, in the bubble, weren't in a good mental space. Now, how we look at it is how sports has always looked at it, which is like, okay, you're not feeling good? Get in there and fix it. Right? Figure it out. But the labeling of like making it about race when there's like that is such you're doing mental gymnastics in order to make that happen is so silly. Matter of fact, it's stupid. And what it does is it hurts your credibility. Make it about what it's about. If you want to say that I'm a male chauvinist pig because I'm questioning how we would be, if you want to be equal, how we would view that, fine. I'm not a male chauvinist pig, but feel free. Because actually, a chauvinist says we should treat women differently than we treat men. That's just the reality to it.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So Zach Wilson is one of two unsigned first-round draft picks. And the reason is he wants to... The front office is hoping to defer millions in signing bonus money to 2022. Normally, the top two picks get their signing bonus money up front. Joe Burrow did. Trevor Lawrence did. Nick Bosa did. Chase Young did. Okay? They received their signing bonuses within 30 days of inking their respective rookie deals. The Jets did this with Sam Darnold. He got his entire signing bonus 15 days after signing, as was reported on social media and the media. Okay? Now, that was Mike Maccagnan's draft pick, not Joe Douglas's. So some of this just comes down to the devil being in the details and whether or not you're going to the wording of the contract. Okay, the wording of the contract in terms of if for some reason Zach Wilson was cut in the last year or two of years of his deal and then he signed. Is there offset language or whatever? This does relate to the Aaron Rodgers story. Okay, what NFL teams don't want or what they want is a lot like the court of law, okay? You don't want to be able to cite precedent. Do you guys remember that? You want to talk about a movie that would have no chance of being made today? Do you remember was it C. Thomas Howell who made Soul Man, Ramos?
That is correct. C. Thomas Howell.
Okay. Do you, Lee, are you old enough to remember Soul Man, the movie?
No, I actually haven't seen Soul Man.
Haven't I? Okay. How old were you in 1986?
I was just about to be born. I was born in 88.
Okay. Byer, do you remember Soul Man?
No.
C. Thomas Howell, no?
No.
Okay. So C. Thomas Howell was a law student who pretended to be black in order to get a full scholarship I think was it to it was to Harvard Law School, right?
I believe it's Harvard, yes.
Yeah, and he used tanning pills in larger doses than prescribed to appear to be African-American. And then he finds out that prejudice and racism exist simply because of the color of his skin. It's actually really, it's a funny movie, but it's a really interesting look at, or perspective at, in the 80s, what it might have been like to be a Harvard Law student if you were black. Okay, but one of the, like, the money lines is it, is the precedent. And he's not paying attention in a law school class. And he stands up and says, the precedent, sir, is Ronald Reagan, right? Well, the precedent and president, obviously two different things. What the NFL teams don't want is they don't want a negative precedent. This is what happened with the Chargers with Joey Bosa. They didn't want to change the offset language. So I understand that players are like, he's a quarterback. He's your number two pick. What are we doing? Get him signed. Get him in camp. But the fact is that the Jets have time on their side. They're not expecting to be good this year. He's not going anywhere else. He's not re-entering the draft. They've already made him he's the face of the Jets. Like, Joe Douglas handpicked him. And while you can sit there and cite Mike Maccagnan and his policies, Joe Douglas is like, nah, I'm not doing it. Because if I do it for him, I got to do it for all the other first-round draft picks that I have. No thanks. Which kind of brings us to the Packers, which is where I do actually understand the Packers and some of their stances. Like, we don't want to do these things because if we give that to Aaron Rodgers, who don't we give into? This is Aaron Rodgers on Green Bay trying to throw money at him.
There wasn't a draft day thing. There were conversations for a number of months leading up to that. Post the draft, I think what basically happened was then they said, we'll give you some money now. Let's see if we can throw some money at you. I said from the start it wasn't about the money. Obviously, I didn't show up for the off-season program or mini camp. To me, it was bigger than this. It was about trying to be a resource for the organization that I care about and love so much.
I mean, look, it's fascinating stuff of what Aaron Rodgers is talking about. Shared with us the deal. Like, hey, they came to me. We talked about things. They didn't want to extend me before the draft. He said he had nothing to do with the draft day leaks. I actually tend to believe that. I think the draft day leaks were all about the Niners thinking they had a chance at a deal, and they leaked it out there. They leaked it out there because they thought they could plant the seeds of dysfunction. Here's Aaron Rodgers on not having talks about an extension.
There was a part of me that did think that there would be conversation about an extension. You know, based on my cap number this season, next season, it seemed natural based on the way I played to at least have a conversation about it. It wasn't a conversation. Not until into May. And that to me seemed like an analogy that you guys understand. You guys have a fantastic year at work. You write some great stories. You go to your boss and say, I just had an incredible year. I think I deserve a pay raise or, you know, some security. And the boss says, yeah, let's just see how it goes. A couple months down the line, you get another job opportunity. You go back to your boss and say, hey, I got this amazing job opportunity. And say, whoa, no, we love you. We do want you to stick around. We do care about you. Just have the same feeling.
Honestly, that's the biggest problem, I think, in my industry, in every industry. Like, what Aaron Rodgers is feeling is real, but it's also completely relatable. Look, ESPN has changed 50 times over since I left in 2012. That was 9 years ago. But every person who worked there when I was there shared generally the same opinion, which was they didn't lose you because of their last contract offer. They lost you because of their first contract offer. Let me say that again. They didn't lose you because of their last contract offer. They lost you because of their first contract offer. What's that mean? My first contract at ESPN, I won't tell you how much I made. That's not, I don't want to share that. It doesn't really matter. Okay? But the only reason I made what I made for what I was doing was I was doing a radio show in Oklahoma City and doing games. And I got offered a job. Actually, Jason Whitlock helped me get offered a job in Kansas City. And that became kind of the baseline of, hey, if you want to get me up here, you have to go above and beyond this. But the way every contract is structured differently there, unlike NFL contracts, which are all generally structured the same because of a union. But the way in which deals are structured there is I was doing a radio show at night, 6 hours a week, 6 hours a night, 4 days a week, 200 shows a year. I think it was 200. Maybe it was 180. I think it was 180 to start. And I had 8 college basketball games. If I appeared in a college basketball game or studio show above and beyond those 8, I got paid a set amount. It's called an overage. If I appeared anywhere outside of radio on a day in which I did radio, I got paid nothing. If I did it on a day in which I wasn't on radio, I got paid a nominal overage fee. That deal was a 3-year deal, I believe, with a 1-year option. And at the end of year 3 or year 4 or whatever, I should have been making far above that. And my first contract offer was more than I was previously making in terms of my actual contract. But when you added in any sort of bonuses or any sort of overage, it was actually less than I was making. Like, hey, I mean, just imagine this, like, right? Like you sign on a job to make $50,000, but the bonuses take you to $75,000. And then 3 years in, your boss is like, hey, guess what? We're going to extend you. We're going to give you a $20,000 raise. And you're like, yes, $70,000. Like, well, wait a second. I make 75. Right? And so eventually they get to the number where you're like, all right, we got to a reasonable number. But the way, it worked at ESPN is 6 months before your contract was up, they had to tell you if they were going to re-up you or not. And generally that was when they made their first contract offer. And they wouldn't get down to the hard negotiating until you're like the last month or two of your contract. So whether it's a month, 2 months, 3 months, 5 months, you go going like, they don't value me at all. They haven't been paying attention. They're not even paying attention at all to all the stuff I'm doing. And you're mad. And then you can take other meetings with other people and you might get the same offer. I mean, that honestly, one of the reasons I left, right, was the first offer for my last deal was not great. It was a lot of money in terms of the grand scheme of things, what I'm actually doing. But in terms of all the things I was doing and all the things and days and I was offering up and willing to work and do basketball on the road, basketball in studio, fill in for any TV show, doing shows all through the summer, do my own radio show, do other radio shows, like do all this stuff. Like, hey, it's a lot. That's the number? Like, it wasn't really a raise. Eventually, 6 months later, they got to the exact number that I told my agent it needed to be. But I was pissed. Because I've been there 9 years. And I was like, man, I've been here 9 years in person, 10 years total. And you'd basically offer me a 1% raise? Come on, man. And this is when everybody was, they were just throwing money at people. So I get what Aaron Rodgers is saying. I think it's really interesting. Like, here's where the Packers screwed it up. They went willing to talk. And then all of a sudden, but I also think that's unfortunately how business is done. How business is done. What an interesting look at the Packers organization, how they do business. He was asked to be considered retirement. Take a listen to his answer. Get that 1 second. This is Aaron Rodgers, whether or not he considered retirement.
Aaron, was there a point over the last few months when you seriously considered retirement for this? You might have, and at what point did you change your mind and decide to actually come back?
Yeah, that's definitely something I thought about. You know, I talked about how important being a full-timer was for a long time. This was the first time to spend the off-season away without a COVID year or a lockout year. And I enjoyed it. You know, I really did. I took time working on myself and trying to better myself in a number of areas where I feel like I could improve based on my own patterns and conditioning. And it was a lot of growth in that process. I continued to find joy and happiness and things off the field. However, there's still a big competitive hole in my body that I need to fill. And as I got back into my workouts, I just realized that I know I can still play and I want to still play. And as long as I feel like I can give 100% to the team, then I should still play.
I think it's a really thoughtful, interesting answer. I'm not sure it came out the way that he and his agent would like to come out in terms of linking him up to a long-term deal. right? It's like we've heard Aaron Rodgers wants to play into his 40s, but that's the real Aaron Rodgers. Everything else he shared is the real Aaron Rodgers. And he just told you right there, like, yeah, I actually had a lot of fun not doing anything football-wise. And then I still have a competitive hole. How long until you fill that hole? Like, we're making the Packers look like the bad guys, look like the dopes. But the reality of it is, 2 years ago, most people, I actually thought he had a better season than most people thought. But the reality is, most people thought his skills were declining. He didn't love the progress of the organization. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he told people around him, I don't want to play into my 40s. Like, I want to have a life. So the Packers have some ammo there to be like, wait, you want us to sign you to an extension when 2 years ago you didn't look great? You've never totally been down with the program. And, oh, yeah, by the way, like you even said to yourself, you enjoyed spending time away from football. You can tell people you want to play till you're 45. The reality is you're not Tom Brady. You're not Russell Wilson. You're not saying all these. This is the real Aaron Rodgers. Interesting. Maybe gave away too much.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's welcome in Pete Doherty, who joins us in the Green Bay Press Gazette. Pete, your first reaction when you hear it played over again?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just rewatching the press conference because there was a lot to digest there. I come away from it thinking he wants his voice heard in personnel. That's a really important to him. And he feels like it hasn't been listened to at all. And I think the Colts, I don't know how Pullian and Manning, you know, what kind of relationship they had there, but he wants more of what he thinks Brady has down in Tampa now. He just wants a significant voice, at least about some things on offense when it comes to personnel. And I think we all probably have our own opinions on whether that's a good or bad idea.
I do think there's a reality to it where he's like, you know, some guys were lowballed, some guys were like the problem with these players, there is an emotional tie. And I actually understood what he was talking about. He's like, look, I know everything in this organization. I can tell you what it's really like as far as work ethic. Like, I want to be a resource there. The problem runs into if he doesn't get the answer that he wants, right? Like, if it's like a Jordy Nelson 2.0, for example, hey, we're going to have to cut Jordy. Like, nah, listen, Jordy's really important. Like, I get it, but he can't play anymore. What happens if he gets the answer he doesn't want? I think that's got to be the organization's biggest fear, no?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Just from what you're saying there, I'm guessing that you and I think quite a bit alike on this because, you know, I wrote down the names he went through. Woodson, Nelson, Peppers, Matthews, James Jones, Randall Cobb, John Kuhn. I mean, you go through that list, Brian Bulaga. I think you have a pretty strong argument they should have cut every one of them or moved on from every one of them when they did. I mean, all were really good players and great guys to have in your team, but it's a young man's game. And, you know, between all the cap considerations and players in decline and how fast they decline in this league, you know, I think they made the right call on one of them. Maybe you could argue they should have kept Woodson a couple of years or another year or two longer. But the rest of them, I think they were right to move on, you know, when they did. And, you know, he said something in the middle of the press conference about, you know, how much he loves and cares about his teammates, and that's why he should be a resource in this. But I think that's kind of would be one of the problems is he gets attached to guys, and he's going to want them to stay, and that's why you don't have players – making personnel decisions. That's why a lot of teams would want to separate coach and GM because they want that GM voice to say to the coach, I know you love this guy, but we got to move on.
I appreciate and my few interactions with Aaron on a personal level, this is kind of the real Aaron Rodgers, right? This is who he really is. and his real thoughts. And there's no, I like the fact that it wasn't a BS press conference. He's not Russell Wilson in the, oh, we love each other. You know, it's like, it's not, on the other hand, here's the real question. Did he make it better by what he said and how he said it today?
No, he definitely did not make it better. I don't know that he made anything worse, maybe a little bit. I'm sure the Packers front office isn't real thrilled about it, but no, it didn't make anything better, but it, I'm sure he felt the need to explain to everybody who follows the team and the league closely about his thinking. And he's a super bright guy and really articulate. So he laid out his position really well, but no, it didn't make anything better. In fact, I mean, you walk away from this. I walked away from it thinking, you know, yeah, this probably is going to be his last year. Now, we also got to remember things change a lot over 6 months in an NFL season. It's like dog years, right? You know, so things could be, the landscape could be totally different come January and February.
Yeah, I know we're all dug in on this as the last year, but he's still under contract next year. They still could franchise tag Davante Adams, whether they want to or not. And there's no reason that if they win, or even if they get to the Super Bowl and lose, the motivation of we're really, really close, there's no reason to close the book on it, because things change so dramatically. And, you know, for example, a San Francisco might not be an option. A Denver might not be an option next year. The Randall Cobb thing, okay? He hasn't been healthy the past couple of years. They bring him back, but they have a replacement who they just drafted. How does that all work in terms of the numbers game of getting him on the field?
Yeah, it uses up cap room that they really don't have to spare, because they're going to need some of it rolled over to next year because they're in really bad shape next year. I don't think it's a good move. I mean, maybe the guy will play well, and he and Rodgers had a really good chemistry, but I mean, the guy's 5'10 and a quarter. He's had injury issues. He turns 31 in August. He was a really good player for him, Cobb was. But he's going to be 31, and he's a small target, and he's not as dynamic as he was. And they've got younger, bigger possession receivers, you know, like, you know, Funchess is playing this year after missing with COVID last year because of he opted out. Lazard is coming into his own, third-year guy. They're both 6'5". They're huge targets, so... I think this is a bad move. This is the kind of, there's a reason that they moved on from Cobb, you know, when they did. And they did it obviously to appease him, and maybe they'll do more stuff like this during, you know, through the course of the year and listen to him more. That'll make him feel like he's got a voice now, and, you know, convinces him to possibly do an extension with him. But he gave off the vibe and basically said, right, you know, as of right now, nothing had changed. And that he felt like he really wasn't being listened to any more than he had been, even though obviously, I mean, there's no way they'd do this trade for Cobb if it wasn't part of him returning. Rodgers, yeah. I mean.
Yeah, it does feel weird. Like, on one hand, he's like, they're not listening to him. On the other hand, like, wait, they just made a move for Randall Cobb, who they don't actually need. It's the opposite of what you're of what you're saying. Okay, so what about the vibe within the team? Because I do think that one of the kind of sneaky secrets to what he was able to do, whether he intended to, and I do think he intended to, because Aaron's a really, really smart guy, is even though he showed there isn't the same player empowerment in the NFL there is in the NBA, he did galvanize all these other players around the league. Like, yeah, we should be treated better, and we should. What is it like in Green Bay now with Aaron Rodgers back in terms of that locker room?
You know, I was really, you know, locker room's not open because of the COVID still, so it's tough to get a feel for that. I was really curious to see how the fans would react, because there's fans back at practice this year, and there was probably 5,000 of them out there. And when the team ran out of the Hudson Center onto that's their indoor facility, onto the practice field behind it, everybody cheered. I didn't hear a boo. And when the offense and defense split to opposite ends of the field, things got kind of quiet because they were just running pass routes on air. One fan yelled out, Aaron Rodgers, welcome back. A little bit later, he threw a pass just, you know, to a receiver running a route on air. And somebody yelled out, nice pass, Rodgers. And going through the practice, he seemed loose, easygoing. It had the same feel as a practice would have 3 years ago. If you didn't know all this was going on, you would have had no sense that of the offseason that the Packers had. So as far as that goes, it seemed like a normal start to training camp.
They reworked the offensive line. Is it better?
I don't know if it's better, but it's I don't know that it's any worse, especially when Bakhtiari comes back, you know, assuming that he's playing okay, they should be just fine. And I think the difference in their offense this year will be, you know, they drafted that A.J. Dillon, and he didn't play much last year, but when he did play, the one game he played a lot, he rushed for over 100 yards, and he's a much better threat with the ball in his hands than Jamal Williams was last year. So when Aaron Jones comes off the field, A.J. Dillon will be on, and they'll have a better running game, which everybody complains about. They're the Packers not doing anything to help Rodgers. Well, beefing up that running game sure helped him. And so having a guy of Dillon's caliber on the field, if he's as good as he looked when he played last year, now they're going to always have a good running threat on the field for all their offensive plays, which helps Rodgers. So looking for improvement from the Packers on offense, that's probably the most likely place where it can come.
Yeah, and then, of course, the Packers defense, they brought King back, but they changed schemes. How different is the Packers defense from last year?
Yeah, it's hard to tell because in the offseason practices, you couldn't tell much. Joe Barry, the new coordinator who came from the Rams, so he's going to run that system. We all asked him question after question about it. He just didn't reveal anything. He talked a lot, but didn't reveal anything about what the defense is going to look like. It'll look like what the Rams did last year. I think they have talent. They got talent at every level, pass rushers, one of the best defensive linemen in the league in Clark. Two good safeties. Alexander's one of the, three or four or five best corners in the league.
Sure.
So they have talent on that side of the ball. So, really, objectively looking at it, their chances should be about as good as anybody's.
Pete Daugherty joining us from the Green Bay Press Gazette, also works for USA Today. Okay, so last thing, and again, you can't pull every Green Bay Packer fan, somebody yells something out, but Green Bay as a city, as an organization, just at a fan base, very different from the rest of the NFL world. If you were to go to a bar in Green Bay and say the name Aaron Rodgers, what would the feelings be today?
So the feeling I got just from running into acquaintances all summer, checking, you know, Twitter comments, emails, things from people I know, things like that, I thought it was probably 70-30 that people were more upset with Rodgers than with the team. That'd just be my best guess. And that probably still might hold true, but, you know, thinking he's in the wrong is different than just wanting him out. You know, I think the percentage of people who just wanted him traded after this was still, you know, wasn't nearly that high. It was probably fairly low still. So I guess you mention it now, and especially people will read all this stuff, and they're probably just, you know, happy he's going to be here this year because it's a promising season. I don't know how much further it would go than that. I'm sure some people are, you know, I know some people were done with him after all this. But I would guess the majority just feel pretty good that he's back this year and this team has a chance to do big things.
All right. My personal question is this. I've never been to Lambeau. I've been invited several times. I almost went. I was supposed to go Favre's first game back with the Vikings when the Vikings won, but I didn't. John Anderson's mom decided to use the tickets that she had. Okay, so if we got to operate under this, it might be the last year for Aaron Rodgers and maybe Devontae Adams in Green Bay. Okay, Lions, I'm going to pass on. It's in September. I'm sure it'll be beautiful. I'm sure it'll be a bloodletting. But I don't want to see the Lions. Okay, you got Steelers, Big Ben. They come there once every 8 years. You got Washington football team, playoff team, great defensive pass rush, historical significance of those two franchises. Seahawks, a team they play, it seems like, yearly in the playoffs. And Rodgers clearly hates Russell Wilson. Right, hates Russell Wilson. Rams, who they beat last year in the playoffs, and they loaded up with Matt Stafford. Bears, longest running rivalry in the National Football League. Browns, again, once every 8 years, and maybe a championship level team. Or the Vikings, which would potentially be his last home game or last regular season home game in a Packers uniform. You can only pick one, Pete. What would it be?
I think I'd go Rams to get a look at how Stafford is with that team. And that was also, I can't remember the date of that game, but it's earlier in the schedule. I would have zero desire to sit up in that stadium in December or January. So
that one's November 28th. That one's after Thanksgiving. Oh, so that's a no. So I thought that too. I thought, here's what I thought. I thought Steelers, because it's October 3rd, still could be pretty nice and pretty cool. Or Seahawks, which is the 14th of November, where you could get a little bit of cold. So you go like, hey, I've been to Lambeau. It's cold. I just wasn't there when it was frozen tundra.
Steelers would be the best one because on October 3rd, you could catch, it could even be a 70-degree day if you get lucky. So that could be really nice. And it's a neat old stadium. You'll if you go, you'll really dig it.
All right, Pete, thanks for joining us. I'm sure you're going to enjoy all the work you get to do on this and all the stories of the Packers leading up to the season. We appreciate you being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
All right, it's Pete Doherty, who, of course, writes for the Green Bay Press-Gazette and USA Today, the Wisconsin Network.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.